you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
A good Saturday to you. This is the weekend edition of the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin, and coming up on today's show, we'll talk about student debt and how federal and state governments have been unable to keep their promise of free or affordable education. Then, how people with serious mental health challenges and addiction living in a home in Hollywood are building a community garden as part of their treatment. It's all coming up, but first, here's a look at what's happening around LA. There's a support group in Pomona for people suffering from long-haul COVID, and now it's open to the public. The meeting was limited to patients of Pomona Valley Hospital, but facilitator Elizabeth Preston says there's a bigger community need for people enduring the lasting effects of the virus.
I can't tell you how many times when I've made that first telephone call, I've been talking to someone who's in tears and saying, I felt so alone.
She says brain fog, fatigue, and other symptoms of long COVID are isolating and can lead to anxiety.
So this gives them an opportunity to touch base and have community. It gives them an opportunity to de-stress.
Preston says participants are given journals to use for creative expression and are taught mindfulness. And because long COVID can affect memory, members of the support group get 3 reminders before each meeting. Those meetings are held both virtually and in person, by the way. For more info, reach out to the Post-COVID-19 Recovery Program at Pomona Valley Medical Center. And LA County is still in the high community level for COVID-19 per the Centers for Disease Control. Public health officials report that cases are on the decline and the number of those with the virus in hospitals have leveled off, and they say they expect the county to move into medium community level soon. For several years now, undocumented immigrants in California have been able to get a driver's license, which doubles as a critical piece of ID. But what about immigrants who don't drive? KPCC's Josie Huang says there's a push to get them ID as well.
A bill in Sacramento would make state-issued ID cards available to any Californian, regardless of their legal status. Backers say it's needed because the driver's license bill left out many people who don't drive, including some elderly people and people with disabilities, and a lot of women who are less likely to have access to a car, like Janet Martinez. Originally from El Salvador, she works as a pupusa vendor in L.A. She says she never tried to get a driver's license because she can't afford a car. Martinez says with a state ID, she could open a bank account, apply for health care services.
I believe that we deserve to be able to be part of our communities, to contribute our whole hearts to our communities.
Immigrant advocates estimate more than 1 million people could benefit from the ID bill. It's passed out of the State Assembly and is moving through the Senate. I'm Josie Huang.
And record rainfall in Death Valley triggered flash flood stranding hundreds. This is National Weather Service meteorologist John Adair.
All roads in and out of Death Valley were closed, and estimated 1,000 people were stranded, 500 visitors and 500 staff due to the closures. Approximately 60 cars were stuck and damaged by rock and debris up to their axles at the parking area.
Park officials say roads will remain closed until park staff can further assess the situation. Hollyhock House is about to reopen to the public. KPCC Suzanne Watley has this update on Southern California's only UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Perched on a small hill in East Hollywood is a grand home designed by famed architect Frank Lloyd Wright, commissioned by philanthropist Elaine Barnsdall, and completed just over 100 years ago. In 1927, she gave it to the city, which established a park in her name and offered tours of the residence with its distinctive cast stone exterior and bold geometric design, reminiscent of a Mayan temple. It underwent extensive restoration work in 2015, and there was more to be done when the house was closed down at the start of the pandemic. The park has since reopened, and soon the house will be open again for public tours. The Department of Cultural Affairs is set to host a ribbon cutting on Thursday, August 18th, and a house lawn party the following Saturday. Its interim general manager says Hollyhock House, named for Barnsdall's favorite flower, has undergone significant transformations. I'm Suzanne Watley.
Lake Tahoe has the distinction of having the clearest lake water in the U.S., but scientists say in the coming years it could get even clearer. KPCC's Zoe Kurland has more.
Researchers at UC Davis have released their yearly State of the Lake report, which details changes in Lake Tahoe's water, including an especially notable development, the declining level of Mysis shrimp. This crouton-sized crustacean was introduced to the area in the 1960s to improve the fishing business, but UC Davis researcher Jeffrey Schlattau says that plan backfired and messed with the food web.
It devours the native zooplankton, the native microscopic animals that keep the lake clean.
Schlattau says having less shrimp in the water will allow the native zooplankton, called Daphnia, to thrive and clean up more debris in the lake.
We're going to get this very large increase in clarity, back to the levels we may not have experienced since the 1970s.
But Schlattau says this new shrimpless clarity won't last forever, just a few years before the Mysis shrimp inevitably return. I'm Zoe Kurland.
States are introducing new laws around abortion since the Dobbs Supreme Court decision, and now local governments are weighing in. For more on the potential power of city lawmakers to influence reproductive rights, we're joined by Mary Ziegler, professor at UC Davis and a historian of reproductive law. Hey, Mary, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with the Orange County City of San Clemente. Last month, a resolution was introduced for the city to become a sanctuary of life. And I should add that the Voice of OC reported that the council members are going to meet at 11 a.m. this morning to maybe reverse the action. But it brings up the question, what kind of powers do cities potentially have to ban abortions within city limits? Is that a form of political theater or are there legal teeth there?
Well, with the San Clemente ordinance, there don't appear to be any legal teeth. The interesting thing is that there has been a kind of broader sanctuary city for life movement, primarily in the state of Texas, but also extending into some other conservative states. And some listeners may remember Texas's SB 8, the law that let literally anyone sue. That had been the way that small towns in Texas got around the fact that towns are not allowed to override state law. San Clemente, to date, at least, doesn't appear to be following that more sophisticated playbook. This does appear to be political theater. But having said that, there's a model for other conservative towns in California or other progressive states to follow if they choose to.
Even if it is only an expression of the city's values, can that still impact access to services?
Sure. I mean, I think one of the greatest issues in a post-Dobbs America is just simple confusion. Mm. People don't know what's legal and what isn't. Doctors are afraid of liability and going to prison. So frankly, are patients, even if that's not a realistic or likely prospect in the short term. So simply having a resolution like this out there can really have a chilling effect on people in San Clemente and even nearby.
There was also a lot of religious language in the San Clemente resolution. There was a quote, just one of many, "We believe that life is God ordained and God is the author and finisher of every life." That's just one example. What are your thoughts on the kind of that kind of language appearing in local laws?
It's striking, obviously, from the standpoint, I mean, the Establishment Clause is still part of the Constitution. Mm. It requires the separation of church and state. It obviously requires that the government not favor one religion over another. And the San Clemente Ordinance raises obvious questions about that, not only because it writes religion into law, but because it writes a particular vision of faith into the law, one that not everyone in San Clemente may be comfortable with, obviously.
We're talking with UC Davis professor Mary Ziegler about what cities can and maybe cannot legislate around abortion. Let's focus on the city of LA for a moment, where the city attorney is proposing a law targeting anti-abortion clinics that may mislead pregnant people about what services they offer. And we were talking about that Texas law. It mirrors that as well and makes it easier for individuals to sue abortion providers, that law in Texas. But in this case, in LA, allows people to sue clinics for misleading them here. And Governor Newsom has emulated it, but for gun manufacturers. Can you talk about why this is becoming more common as the use to sue for individuals to sue to try to change policy coming from either side of the political aisle?
Well, I think when this law was first proposed in Texas, everyone just thought this simply cannot be, right? That states or cities can do an end run around what the Supreme Court says the Constitution means or what everyone thinks the Constitution means simply by being clever and doing a good job lawyering. But the U.S. Supreme Court seems to have said when it came to this Texas law, that's absolutely what you can do. So now I think what you're seeing in states like California and cities like Los Angeles is progressives saying, okay, if clever lawyering is all you need for someone to second guess or override the constitutional interpretations of the Supreme Court, we can play that game too. So I think in a way it's kind of calling the bluff of the U.S. Supreme Court and saying if this is really a valid mechanism, this sort of letting everyone sue, it's going to be used to ends that the conservative justices on the court may not like.
That's UC Davis professor Mary Ziegler talking to us about what cities can legislate around abortion access. Mary, thank you so much. And I believe you moved to California recently. Just want to say welcome.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks so much. Take care.
We'll be back with more LA Report in a moment.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting an evening in focus, Goya. The museum's galleries come to life at this interactive event, celebrating the opening of the exhibition, I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. Enjoy live music, art-making activities for all ages, live model drawing, tours, and more. Free with museum admission. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Conversations around student debt in the U.S. tend to focus more on individual responsibility for paying loans back and less about how the federal government turned what's supposed to be a pathway to economic mobility into a profit center, or how a state government that promised to keep education free had to start charging. Our higher education reporter, Julia Barajas, has the story.
Some borrowers are still in college. Others are teachers, counselors, social workers, urban planners, and public defense attorneys. They paid their way through college with a combination of grants, scholarships, and loans, and all of them worked, at least part-time. Many are the first in their families to earn a college degree, and in some cases, they were the first to study past grade school. Our conversations began with a simple question. How much do you owe?
My name is Cindy. I am from Hacienda Heights, California, and I have $28,700 on loans.
My name is Ernesto. I'm from Compton, and I owe the U.S. government over $150,000.
Hey, I'm Cruz from Whittier, and I owe about $2,000.
My name is Maritza Cha. I'm from Los Angeles, and I owe the U.S. government $143,927.
My name is Joseph. I'm from Wilmington, and in terms of student loans, I'll owe $40,000 by the time I graduate.
My name is Stephanie Perez. I'm from East Hollywood. I owe the federal government $75,375.10.
Before the pause, these borrowers were making monthly payments, but when they looked at the remaining balance, most had barely made a dent. Stephanie Perez earned a bachelor's degree at NYU and a master's at Cal State LA.
It's interesting that people think that elites are the ones who are taking out student loans.
She won scholarships for undergrad, but still had to take out loans. So for grad school, she paid out of pocket.
When I was paying cash for my master's, I was also living in my mom's living room in order to be able to save money so that I wasn't houseless.
In the decades following World War II, the federal government emphasized greater access to college and more financial aid. But college costs have risen as states cut their funding, and that aid hasn't kept up. Back in the 70s, federal Pell Grants for low-income students covered about three-quarters of in-state public tuition. Today, they cover less than a third. In California, leaders used to promise free college education. Now the state accounts for $141.8 billion in student debt. Critics of loan forgiveness say that students made these choices, but others argue it wasn't much of a decision, that college
is portrayed as the single best ticket to ensure their own success or stability in that of their family.
That's Louise Seamster, a sociologist at the University of Iowa who researches student debt. She and her colleagues describe the current system as predatory. She says that at the same time more effort was made to enroll women and students of color, college costs increased.
The story became that higher education was the ticket to ending racial and gender and economic inequality, and yet the price tag of that ticket, the debt that is assumed along with it, undermines the value of that education.
For students without intergenerational wealth, loans are often the only way to pay for college, especially advanced degrees. For grad students and those in professional schools, unsubsidized loans are the norm. Those loans start accruing interest immediately, and at higher rates. Cruz Castillo earned a bachelor's degree at Cal State LA and a master's in creative writing at a public tribal college in New Mexico. To keep costs down, he started at a community college. He also earned scholarships and got help from his mom.
If Biden right now just signed that and it was all student debt's gone and my student debt's gone, that saved me a little more than $2,000. That is rent for me in Los Angeles. I get to survive one more month in my apartment. And that's just me with my tiny amount. So imagine these other people.
Canceling $10,000 would wipe out the debt of about a third of borrowers. But if the aim of higher education is to create a path to social mobility, experts like Seamster say the U.S. needs to transform how education is financed. Covering higher education, I'm Julia Barajas.
Board and care homes provide critical support for people living with a serious mental illness. LA lost hundreds of these beds last year alone. At one board and care in Hollywood, residents illustrated why these homes are so important. With more, here's our mental health reporter, Robert Garova.
Just off Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, residents of a two-story mid-century apartment complex are throwing a party. They're celebrating their new community garden, complete with yellow sunflowers and pink perennials planted by residents. Robert Allen has lived at the Bel Air Guest Home for about 5 years and gave a speech. He just marked his 70th birthday.
We are living in a most colorful place with this garden to share our whole day long with you, my friends. Thank you very much. Please do enjoy this garden.
Surrounded by expensive apartments and million-dollar homes, the Bel Air Guest Home offers vital support to dozens of residents experiencing mental illnesses. Edgar Ramirez is an administrator for this community, which is known as a board and care home. He says he came to the U.S. from El Salvador in 1986, and he's been working here ever since.
I dispense the medications, I monitor their behavior, you know, I communicate with the social workers, with medical doctors, with the psychiatrist.
At this place, residents with a serious mental illness get meals provided every day and extra help managing their routines from Ramirez and his co-workers.
I feel like I've been helping them a whole lot. Jobs that not everybody else want to do, but I do.
Ramirez says he feels like it was his destiny to work here all these years. And he says he's proud to help people who are treated like trash on the streets.
I feel like we should not be stuck up because it could be you, it could be me, it could be anybody that will develop mental illness and addiction problems.
But LA simply doesn't have enough people like Ramirez or places like Bel Air Guest Home, in part because the reimbursement rate is about $40 a day in many cases. LA City Councilmember Nithya Raman said last week that she's introduced a resolution urging higher reimbursement rates from the state, which are already slated to go up in the next couple of years. Carrie Morrison heads up the nonprofit Heart Forward, which has the goal of transforming the mental health system. Her husband helped build the planter boxes.
They are keeping these places running and open with incredibly minimal resources.
Last year, LA saw hundreds of board and care beds disappear at a time when they're desperately needed.
It's a baby palm tree.
Is it around?
It's right over there.
Sporting a white button-up and shiny yellow tie, Robert Allen shows me his prized addition to the garden.
It looked like it was dying, so I took it and put it in a pot. And it's growing. But if it gets too big, we have to give it to the city. It's a baby palm tree.
Allen says he thinks this garden is helping residents with stress and depression.
And I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up in spite of the ache. I'll rise again.
Resident London Odom goes by the stage name Una and sang at the party. Odom lives with schizophrenia and came to Bel Air Guest Home about 6 months ago after spending weeks in the psych ward of Glendale Memorial.
I was in a place of hurt and distress, and I had so much trauma
And so gardening is like therapy.
Odom says it's crucial Angelenos come together to find a way to keep homes like this open. She stands next to a sunflower that's having its moment in the LA sunshine.
This guy right here, he's the tallest one, and he looks straight at my door, and I think that's like a thank you through nature.
It's so tall she can touch it from the second floor. But Odom says that wasn't always the case. At one point, she had to keep it stable with splints and duct tape. But then the time came to cut off the supports.
I want to see if it healed. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, it's standing by itself. So they need to have a really good base. The more that I get to spend in the garden, the more I'm understanding that, you know, nature is around us and it's around us for a reason. And we need to cherish it because it's just like humans.
Odom says she feels lucky to live at a place like this. She knows too many people stuck in temporary housing, waiting for a space of their own to set down roots. Covering mental health, I'm Robert Garova.
Hey, thanks for listening to the weekend edition of the LA Report. We'll be back tomorrow with more of what's happening around LA. Until then, try to take it easy. I'm Julia Paskin.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at laist.com/sweeps.